Welcome to episode number 30 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Galuzzo. Sitting across from me is Mr. Ryan Turek.
Hello.
I'm going to mix things up. Also here is Elric Kane.
Aww.
I went in a different
Hi,
order.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
That's good. Ryan, you're looking sharp.
You were holding that damn Boddington's like a commercial. That's like you're displaying it.
As being
he's
a pod
like,
person.
He's like well behaved today.
He's wearing a suit jacket. He's freaking me out.
The night he's young though.
Yeah.
Possession and, shirt though.
The shirt's gonna come off.
We're not closing out this year with an Elric introduction slate.
That, yeah.
I don't know what
no
we're
way.
Doing. We're doing it wrong.
And last but not least, Mr.
whoa there. Doctor, please.
Guys, I know you don't think of me like that.
I meant the only girl in the room. I meant to say doctor, and for some reason my mind went to Mr. But no, Dr. Rebecca McKenzie.
Are you saying all doctors have to be boys, Rob? Is that it?
No, so maybe subconsciously that's what I thought, but you're not.
I will slam this theory later.
You're not a man, baby. We are well aware.
Watch out, millennial snowflakes. Rob's getting edgy over here.
Jesus. So, hi. Welcome to episode 30. Just to kick off right off the bat, we got to send a shout out to Ryan Larson, who is a gentleman that started the Shockwaves Horror Movie Club group on Facebook.
Hell
and
yeah.
Let me tell you, we are all kind of blown away by it. It's really, really cool. And it was just, from my understanding, Ryan just wanted to chit-chat with a few people that also listen to the show about some of the movies we talk about and then kind of, talk about recommendations and things like that. And it's kind of blossomed over the course of the last few days. I think right now there's 150 members in there. And if anything, the reason I like it, things are fine on our regular Facebook page, but the positive vibes and enthusiasm from the people that are in there, and obviously we've all dipped in and started interacting as well.
Yeah.
It's something fun about continuing the conversation in this group.
Keeps it focused.
Yeah,
that's what it does.
Yeah.
It's like it's kind of isolating the conversation to just films as opposed to general Shockwaves chatter and Blumhouse chatter.
Like there was a big discussion on The Wailing today
that
I joined in on, and it was awesome.
So, and also, I just want to give a shout out to Ryan. He used to write for me over at Shock Till You Drop.
That's so funny. He sent me a message saying, I don't know if Ryan remembers.
Oh,
but,
no, of course I do. No,
yeah,
no,
totally.
Absolutely. No, I think it's fantastic. So, Ryan, thank you for the support once again.
Yeah, and if you don't already like the group or if you haven't joined it, it's liking is like a page deal, but just search it out, Shockwaves Horror Movie Club, and then just join the group. And it's pretty cool. We've decided we're so happy with how it's turned out that I think we're going to like reveal little things on there first before anywhere else.
Like
for example,
a little exclusive.
My favorite part was
who our guest is.
Yeah. Well, my favorite part so far was, I think it was 2 days ago whenever it started, and one of the guys posted on there, he said, hey, fellow shockers. And when I heard that's what they're calling themselves, I'm like, oh my God, that's the greatest
that
thing
so
ever.
Cool.
I hadn't even thought about that, calling people shockers.
I also think the second or third post was the cover of Possession. Like, hey, has anyone heard of this movie here?
Yeah. And is this the right, is this the right edition to get? And I'm like, yep.
Yeah. Alex, I got this one. Yeah. It's all good.
It really is cool. You know, look, we're like the Grateful Dead, man. We just run on good vibes. You guys keep sending good vibes. Tell us what you like about what we're doing, and we'll keep doing it. You
yes.
Know?
Over there.
We're exactly like the Grateful
Dead. And one
Dead.
Day we will have live shows and you can trip in the parking lot. That is exactly
basically.
How it's going down.
Kind of meant one day we'll all be dead, but you know.
Okay. But no, we're really happy about that and appreciate it. So join the group and let's talk about movies there.
Elric's getting naked already, guys.
Taking the shirt off. It's getting hot.
Yeah, it is getting hot.
So there are so many movies I watch because we are gearing up to do our best of 2016 episodes. So I think all of us are kind of racing to either rewatch things or watch things that one of us have recommended.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of stuff.
And also, I was also going to say, it's also cram time for a lot of distributors
who
are just kind of like racing to release stuff by the end of the year.
December is always called dump month.
I thought it was January.
Well,
no. Dump month. But
it was a time, but I don't think that – I think that when you have movies like – Logan and Ghost in the Shell coming out in March, like dump month, summer movie season, it's all been eradicated. Everything's eradicated now in terms of the distribution model, in terms of when is a good time to release a movie.
So. Yeah, especially because, and we've talked about this, about how we're viewing things, because I think, and it's sad to say, theatrical is somewhat, not where it used to be by any means. I think we can all agree on that without getting into what the best viewing method is, Elric Kane.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, since theatrical isn't what it used to be, does it even matter as much anymore, like when these things are coming out? But we will discuss
that. Yeah, that's a larger discussion.
But there's movies like The Autopsy of Jane Doe. When I saw that release date, that does strike me as a bit of a dump. I mean, December 21st or something? You're like, weird, right?
Well,
at Christmas?
I mean, if you could think about it, everyone's home last week of, you know, if they're aiming for a VOD audience, I mean, you know, it'll be limited theatrical, but they're aiming primarily for VOD, and most people will be home and off from work that last week of the year. It could be catered towards that. But yeah, we'll delve into how we consume a lot of this stuff because, yeah, a ton of movies have just come out right at the tail end here. I'll kick us off because there's so many and we'll go around the table, but I'm going to pair a few up as we go along. Let me talk Vestron Video really quick. They've just put out Return of Living Dead 3 and Chud 2. So I just got both of them and I checked both out. I forgot how solid a movie Return of Living Dead 3 is.
I thought you were going to say Chud 2 and I was like, are you serious?
Ryan just laughed at me. What are you laughing at me for?
Because like two episodes ago, I'm going, I forgot how really bad this is.
Well, I'm here to counter you, Ryan. Because
let me just say, I haven't seen it lately, but Yuzna is timeless. his films just don't age.
I should say it's bad, but I enjoy it, and I down the $40 to buy it.
No, the price is too much. Yeah. But no, what I mean by that is it reminds me, there is a, you know, what's been interesting about the six releases that they've done is they are all thematically kind of similar in terms of like a certain time period when you discovered these movies on video. And yeah, Yuzna is somebody I didn't appreciate when he was making these movies.
Yeah.
Now in retrospect, it's like I still don't like Bride of Reanimator nearly as much as the original, but now that I have the Arrow Blue, I kind of appreciate it.
Well, you have this guy who's like, he admits to not being good with actors and directing.
Yeah.
What he's good at is getting really interesting effects and surrealism and like telling a weird story like no one else. And that's the difference between him and Gordon. Gordon's actually a great director.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where that's why one is classics and one is just like cult, you know, movies.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, look, what I'll say about it is I remember it just reminded me of why this movie has the cult status that it does because so many, you know, in the same way that all those dudes loved The Crow, like growing up, this is that movie that like every girl I've ever met that's into horror is like, oh my God, that's like my favorite movie because
Mindy Clark.
It's got this little love story at its heart. And like,
did you see them in order? Because I definitely saw three first.
I saw them one and two. Okay. Yeah, I saw them in order. And at first the thing was three is like so not, you know, connected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then you kind of appreciate it for being, oh, well, at least they made a left turn as opposed to two, which is like a remake of one.
Right.
Almost.
Well, did you watch the special features? Because they kind of go into you know, how it began, which was like, we got the rights to this title. What do we do?
Yeah.
Well, we can't really connect it, but we can throw it. They can have the trioxin.
Yeah, it was like, that's what we need to at least have that element.
That's the thread, and then there's like one other thing, and then that was it. And then
that was fun.
Go wherever they wanted.
At least they didn't go to Chernobyl for those ones. One of the worst news stories in my life when they said, hey, we're going to Chernobyl to film two back-to-back
and movies. And one's called Rave to the Grave, about 5 years too late.
From the director of Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah, Eight-Legged Freaks, baby. Kiwi.
I still have a ping pong paddle from Eight-Legged Freaks, because that's what they gave out, was ping pong paddles.
I got to tell you, not to deviate, but when that trailer debuted at Fangoria Weekend of Horrors, it brought the house down.
It was kind of fun when I saw it in the theater.
Ellery Elicalum or something.
And we have traveled from Chud 2 to Eight-Legged Freaks in a matter of 30 seconds,
why not?
Guys.
Why not?
But no, Return 3 is cool. And again, I love Brian using this so candid about everything. So the special features are great. It's him and the screenwriter talking about how this thing came together. And
so the funny thing, I don't know what order you watch the special features in, but it was a delight watching Mindy Clark talk about, you know, horror movies, her time doing this, you know, not being in love with horror movies and then her career. And then someone had mentioned during the interview, you know, did you feel safe around, you know, being so scantily clad, did you feel safe around the crew? And she was like, oh, everybody was super respectful. Everybody was really great. Then you jump over to the Steve Johnson interview and he's like, yeah, so that was really hot. And it's just like, I'm a guy, and seeing her come out that way, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Steve Johnson is my favorite new go-to in these behind the scenes. If he pops up in any of them, I know it's going to be honest and straight to the point. I still think his interview
dichotomy
on Species 2 is one of the best that he's ever given.
Yeah.
So that was great. And then I jumped over to Chud 2, which, believe it or not, I don't think I've ever seen in its entirety.
I don't think I can go back.
Well, here's the
thing. It's a little dry.
It's one of my least favorite first viewings of my life.
Well, my memory of it was, I mean, I don't remember, I haven't picked up Chud yet like Ryan has, but I don't remember either of them that well.
No.
So I just watched it as its own movie.
Right.
And I actually thought it was kind of fun in the same way that a chopping mall and a blood diner, you know, it's not a great movie by any means, but it's kind of goofy having Garrett Graham be like this zombie guy that, you know, with it just fits that time perfectly. And it's funny because I think it's like 1990 or so. It's early 90s.
What was the date on that? Yeah.
Early 90s, but it totally feels like a late 80s movie. Like it still has that 80s vibe to it and the 80s hair, of course.
Yeah. I think but that's Garrett Graham, though.
Yeah, it was. But I'm curious about the demand for that one. Because that's the movie I've never met anyone who's come up to me and go, oh, Chud 2 is a great movie.
Yeah,
and yet they must have put that one out because there had been some sort of demand besides Becca.
I bet. Becca.
I was totally cheering for it. I was like, come on, guys, why don't we have a Chud 2?
Phantom of Paradise fans were the pushed for it.
Used Cars is better movie.
But yeah, those both stylistically fit together and make sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that. I should rewatch it because as a kid, I wasn't prepared. I think I was like 11 when I started Chud 2, and I didn't have a clue what the hell that movie was like.
Yeah, I liked it when I was a kid, but I tried... Mistakenly, this is one of those like you shouldn't rewatch your childhood memories things. A couple of years ago, I bought the VHS tape of it and rewatched it, and I was just like, "Wow, this is really boring and nothing's really going on." And
it's just a goofy Chud,
more Chud, please.
I gotta buy Chud.
I think I've ever seen it.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
All right, let's see.
If you don't, it needs
more Chud.
Well, I guess that's the thing. Yeah. Is in the same way that Return 3 has nothing to really do with the other ones, it's the same thing with this. Yeah. The only connection is that they refer to them as Chuds,
which is too bad because you can actually take the Chud idea a couple steps further.
Oh, totally.
You know, and spread it throughout. Oh, yeah. You know,
it's just a traditional horror comedy zombie movie. Yeah. That's what it is.
It's more like Fido.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so if you look at it like that, it's totally fun. But
interesting.
Anyway, I saw those. They're pretty good. I hope Vestron does some sort of sale because, I mean, my biggest critique, and I'm going to write an article about this probably before the year's out, is we have hit as collectors and fans, and I know our listeners probably relate to this, we have hit the bubble. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, I don't make that much money, but I make enough where I love to pick the stuff up. And now, like, I question every release because Arrow's hitting us, Vestron's hitting us. Scream Factory's always been in the game, and they've kept it moderately priced. But between that and even the vinyl stuff, like this is the first time I've actually flinched at the Waxworks subscription club, and I haven't signed up yet because I can't afford it. It's tough times. But anyway,
There's a lot to pick from, and I do have to I went through that where I was like, when they first released Blood Diner, I was like, holy crap, Blood Diner's coming to Blu-ray. Okay, can I justify $40 for Blood Diner? I did. I ended up picking up Blood Diner.
Amazon price is a little cheaper, but still.
And you can usually, if you wait, like, I swear, it's like 2 weeks, a used one will pop up in, like, perfect condition for, like, half the price. So I usually end up buying used, like, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I wonder.
Nothing wrong with used.
I'm real curious what the price point is. I think it's, like, $25. I think $25 for a new thing, I would be okay.
And that, and that's what Scream Factory usually charges for their new releases. Yeah. It's usually at the $25 mark. But really,
it's a large special edition. I've seen like 32.
Like those Vincent Price ones I shelled out a bit more for.
Right.
Yeah, but those
you get more movies.
Yeah, that was a box set.
Yeah, it's got all that stuff on it.
But really, I blame Arrow for kind of
coming into
invading into the U.S. territory and being like, Bride of Reanimator, $40. Mm. And you're like,
I don't know.
But it's limited.
I gotta say, they're...
Like right now, I can't get Creepshow 2. I mean, they're putting out a regular one, but limited edition one. All these people ordered it, but apparently they're limited to 3,000. Amazon has canceled all orders. I ordered it from Target. I can't get it.
I'm holding my Driller Killer Arrow release right now, and I'm really excited about it.
Too,
I got the Creepshow 2 here, too.
And who would have thought? Like, I can't get Creepshow. Well, that's you have the regular one there. But
yeah, the Creepshow is the regular.
It comes with there's a limited edition that comes with a slipcase and, like, a comic book.
Oh, damn.
And that one you cannot get.
I'm super psyched about that Driller
Killer Christmas to us, guys.
Oh, hell no. That Driller Killer is totally mine.
Okay, we spent way too much time on that. Go ahead, Ryan. Right. You're up.
Last Friday, Netflix debuted Spectral, which was a Legendary Pictures film. Legendary is the company behind Godzilla, The New Kong, Krampus.
Part of Universal, right?
No, Warner Brothers.
Warner,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're part of Warner Brothers. Trick or Treat. Along the period of, I think, Godzilla getting announced and all kind of like these bigger movies, they announced Spectral with this director, Nick Matthew.
Which was supposed to open in August of 2016, and then August came and went.
Yeah. Well, and what had happened was it was supposed to open in August. I had heard testing was doing okay, but... it was always labeled as Call of Duty meets Ghostbusters, which is like sends your imagination reeling a little bit. But they debuted it on Friday, and you watched it as well back
then. It is awesome.
It's pretty cool.
I had so much fun with it. I mean, it's not the smartest thing. I mean, there's a lot of it that I'm like, I can't believe I'm into this.
Yeah, if you're looking for any shred of character emotion or Platoon or Platoon-esque like character depth, you ain't gonna get it.
Yeah, because it definitely it has an alien feel to it, but it does not have that same kind of
nothing.
No character depth whatsoever.
Total disconnect from every single person. Emily Mortimer is in this thing playing like a translator, but basically it's about these soldiers with really cool weaponry who are sent into this Eastern European country,
Moldova,
and basically these ghosts have been unleashed on this town. And you can't see them unless you've got this high-tech these goggles that you can actually see the ghosts.
They're called spectral goggles.
Yeah, something like that.
Probably.
Sure. And so what happens is they go in there, and when you're facing an enemy you can't see, then where do you run? Where can you hide? Blah, blah, blah. And basically they send this team in to go take care of the problem. The team realizes they're up against insurmountable odds, much like aliens, you know, which they realize, oh, we can beat them, we can beat them. Oh, shit, no, we can't.
Yeah, there's like no way to kill the ghosts, and if they touch you, you die immediately.
Yeah, they blow through you like wind, and then you just like immediately drop. And so it's all about this squad that needs to figure out how to kill the ghosts, where the ghosts are coming from, why are they there to
begin with. Are they actually ghosts?
Are they man-made, and what's going on? And you kind of go with the mystery for a little bit. And you know what? If I was 15 or 13 years old, I would totally be into this movie. I would love it because it would play into that video game loving Turek that was like, I just want to see soldiers take on ghosts, you know? Mm-hmm. And it has a great sense of escalation. It's got some pretty cool action. You know, the ghosts kind of bounce around and float through people.
I thought the scope was amazing because,
that's a legendary money plan.
Yeah, there's some beautiful legendary money there because the horror films that we've gotten used to, because most horror films are like $2 million and under now, and I think even that's a little bit generous. Since horror films are working under reduced budgets, like to see something where it's like entire city landscapes and we're blowing up this building.
Oh,
and here's 5,000 ghosts running at you. It's like, oh my God.
Still do that in Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. But to speak to what Becca is talking about is like Legendary has the bank account to do kind of mid-range movies. And I wouldn't even call this a horror movie. It's more of just kind of like first action sci-fi with hints of horror just because of the kind of supernatural elements.
Wait, so they would have sold this direct to Netflix?
They sold it direct to Netflix and made it, and Netflix was able to put the Netflix
which
original
I think
on.
Is actually a really smart move because having seen this, I have to say, if I had shelled out, okay, $40, like another $20 for a sitter, bought popcorn, dropped $60 and gone to see it, it would have been like, wah, I am so pissed off. But seeing it on Netflix, I was like, I stumbled on it and was like, what's this? This looks cool.
Yeah. Once
and
again,
I was
habits,
just
right?
like, oh my God, this is amazing. And immediately I got on Facebook and Twitter and started tweeting about it and had people like, yeah, I just watched it tonight. Yeah. It's fun. Well, don't expect the smartest movie.
It
but
didn't look
it's
like
fun.
My jam, right. but I could see what the appeal
Well,
was.
Let me ask, and it could be apples and oranges, but speaking of Legendary, how does it compare in terms of like Pacific Rim, like as a sci-fi? You know, because that feels to me like a perfect 13-year-old movie on the big screen sort of deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
is it similar to that?
Plot doesn't hold up as well as like Pacific Rim because it's not quite it's not quite as leveled. I mean, there's not as much going on.
Well, yeah, and what Spectral doesn't have is faces. Right. You know, it doesn't have Charlie Hunnam. It doesn't have you know all these people. Here you have James Badgedale, who I think most people will remember from Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm. But he's a great actor. Hmm. But it's just like a bunch of just character actors, and then Emily Mortimer and stuff like that. But it's a perfectly like fine movie. I saw a lot of people bagging on it like ruthlessly, and it's like, guys, you know what? You sat back on a Friday night and you watched this on Netflix, you know. But like Becca said, if you went to the movies and shelled out $60 for dinner, movies, babysitter, all that stuff, you would have been pissed. Yeah. But again, it's just. In an era where no one's doing mid-range, weirdo kind of combo movies like this, you know, it's like, okay, that's an achievement in and of itself. It's something different. When you're watching these kind of weird robot
dog things
with like these spectral like these flashlights that are able to identify the ghosts out there.
Yeah.
Walking into combat with all these soldiers just blasting away at ghosts. It's like, that's cool.
That's cool. Know? Yeah. Super There's cool. things blowing up. It definitely. Yeah. It was my kind of movie where I didn't have to think a lot throughout.
Yeah, exactly.
It
exactly.
kind of told me exactly what I needed to know to continue on to the next scene. And then they blew shit up. And it was fun.
Yeah. I saw a film on a similar scale to that, like that kind of big, you know, those kind of movies you're surprised to make called Micro and Massacre. And it was just, epic scale. My notes. I'm going to just read you my notes. It says Microwave Massacre, and then it says boobs, then it says unwatchable question mark, and then it says why arrow why, and that is my review.
So I should turn in my unopened copy of Microwave Massacre.
I'm going to tell you guys, let me just preface this by saying, just because you hate something doesn't make you a hater, okay? So no one think I'm saying this out of hatred for trying to hate on this movie. This is the worst thing I've seen this year, and it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life, to the point where I actually question, is it even a movie? Or is it just boobs with credits? I don't know. And I like boobs. Big fan of boobs.
You know, it's
What's
a shame.
What's the percentage of microwaving to boobs?
Very low microwave percentage.
How much
and
is the microwave
here's
use?
What it feels like.
Is it on full heat, or is it on just like kind of 10%?
It's not even a microwave. It's this big oven thing that was like probably pre-microwave, I guess.
Is it used frequently? Like, does it become like allegorical in any way?
Not really. No, what's weird about this movie is the cover is so great, just like a lot of movies, right? So I would watch this based on the cover. So that's where I was coming from. Is on Amazon, so it's the same version you get.
It's on Shudder, actually.
Oh, yeah,
so
on Shudder,
if you subscribe to Shudder, you can watch
it. And I love a lot of things on Shudder, just not this. and I know somebody out there, this is like their movie, so they're going to be mad, but probably not because it's pretty bad. There's a stand-up comedian as the lead in this. And he's not a guy, I think his name's Jackie Vernon. I'm not familiar with him, but he's probably like poor man's Rodney Dangerfield. And it is like watching the worst stand-up routine for an hour and a half instead of a horror film. It's never really a horror film. There's a little bit of cannibalism eating something, but it's always done as a bad kind of Blood Diner-y joke.
Yeah.
But not as good as Blood Diner, which is still not a great
movie.
It's just a fun one.
It's fun.
It was really like I was about 20 minutes in and go, I'm only going to finish this so I can tell people on the show that I finished this movie. There's nothing else pulling me through. I just, you know, it's, you know, one of those things you're like, wow, the fact that Arrow would put that big a package out is mind-blowing and cool. Like, for that person who loves it,
yeah.
But also mind-blowing because there are much more deserving titles. I can't even quantify it. So I'm not a fan. But, you know, check it out for yourself, especially if you have Amazon.
So when we do our all-night weekend massacre marathon, this is not going
to
be
that one would put me to
sleep.
I mean, you kind of have to throw it in. I've seen some bad massacre titles. Woodchipper Massacre is even worse.
Oh, I don't know.
It's really bad.
I can't watch it again. You know what?
But since you mentioned it, I will give a plug, actually. Yeah. Despite the prices of Arrow, usually, right now, our friends at Diabolik DVD are doing a huge sale on Arrow stuff till the end of the year.
The best site to buy stuff. If you, you know, I just love that.
The guy
I
who
have
runs
so much
it,
stuff
Jesse, is amazing.
Jesse's great.
And
I think they're 50% off on a lot of their titles.
Yeah.
So.
No,
and
I
you can always find Code Red stuff there, like even when they don't have it on their site. Jesse has
I'd
it.
I'd be much more excited about like Parents. You know, Parents coming out is much more interesting.
Well, the only reason
than
I thought is because I'm pretty sure I saw Microwave Massacre there for like
$15
bucks. Yeah. So I'm like, all right.
Man. Is it worth $15, Elroy?
It's not.
Ryan bought it, right? Because I saw it in your office.
I paid full price for
You did. You did.
I wouldn't. You would pay me to watch it one more time. I'm not even kidding. That's not even a joke. I'm not a fan. But just a couple of the quick short ones. I also rewatched our guest Jackson's film because I saw it one time.
Yeah.
It was super late at night when I saw it last. I went to it the day after he was on our show, I think. And I liked it a lot more. I mean, I liked it when I first saw it, but what I liked about it is it's very rare to see indies that have a big idea but are still super low-budget indies. And usually that fails, like falls flat straight on its face. And this, even though there's certain parts that are less successful because of that, the imagination and heart come through really well. So just that's still on VOD. Check it out. It's really, I think for a lot of our generation, it's like perfect nostalgia ride.
Yeah.
And just fun, like the game's fun. It was fun to revisit that one. And one other of just these short ones, Silent Night, Bloody Night, I'd never seen.
Oh, I'd never seen that one either.
Streaming on Amazon, really shitty quality. Like, so it looks like VHS quality, unfortunately. It's not a restoration. There's apparently an HD master that Vinegar Syndrome or some company put out a couple years ago. They didn't release it. They just kind of gave it away on something.
Yeah, it's already public domain.
Yeah, it's something. But I really liked the movie. It was a lot of fun. It's like it feels like a prototypical slasher, Christmas slasher. Like it feels like one of the first ones to kind of, besides obviously Silent Night, Deadly Night. It is more a little more giallo-y because it's a little more whodunit in its setup, but it has the sequence towards the end that's like basically like Dr. Caligari. It's all shot totally. It's like a flashback to the past, shot almost expressionistic, all kind of brown filter, and it tells you the whole crazy story in the back, which makes it almost a different movie. But I think this would be a great addition to your Christmas watch list. Mm. It's not like I didn't love it. I was more like, oh, this is pretty cool, which is better than Bloodbeat, the bad Wisconsin samurai ghost movie that for Christmas you don't need.
Yeah. It's in my queue. I have to watch that.
So. Yeah, and Mary Warnoff's like really young and looks great, and it's just fun. It's got a lot of voiceover. It's like that Messiah of Evil voiceover, which was probably done post you made a movie, and then you need to make sense of it, so you know straddle the voiceover. But it's cool that Amazon, like, I like being able to watch these things, even if the quality's poor. I like that it's better than putting on a VHS tape for me. You know, it's easier, and it's so that was fun. So you know, I'm still trying to track down a copy of the Hess one. To All a Good Night.
There's Christmas a Blu-ray episode. Of it.
Yeah, I want to see that before Christmas.
It's something, I have a VHS of it if you get desperate.
No, I've heard it's so dark that you need the Blu-ray.
Yeah, the Blu-ray is pristine, but unfortunately you see the everything that's shot at night is actually in the day.
Oh, okay.
And they're selling you on, it's night.
But anyway, let's keep going around because I have a couple that I really love.
Yeah, what'd you see, Becca?
So this was like my awesome find of the year. I'm so excited about this. It's not like a crazy hard to find. I just kind of stumbled on it though. So while I was looking for Spectral on Netflix, I went to the Netflix original button. And there, the first thing that popped up, and it was under this like, you might like, and it was called 3%. And I hadn't heard of this. And so I clicked on it. It is a Brazilian TV show that was made as a Netflix original. It's the first Netflix original Brazilian production. Hmm. It was awesome. I'm only 3 episodes in, so I can't speak much to it. But last night when I started it, I watched like 3 episodes back to back because I was so into it. It is about, I'll say it's kind of Hunger Games meets Battle Royale meets Cube. Hmm. Because and it's also got all these like really smart like puzzles and mind games in it. It is about a post-apocalyptic society where 3% of the population lives in this, and they haven't given much details about it. I assume more is going to be released later. 3% of the population lives in this magical land called the offshore, where everyone can follow their dreams and has money and there's no crime and everything like that. The other 97% of the population lives in absolute poverty, has no supplies, water is unheard of, so nobody can bathe or wash their hair or anything like that. Like, it's just absolute horrible conditions. When you turn 20, everyone goes into this thing called the process, and they pick 3% of the population to go to the offshore. You will never be heard of again. You will never go back and see your parents. And so it follows a group of 20-year-olds as they enter the process. And you find out in the first episode that there's some people who are trying to overthrow the process, that they think that the whole system's corrupt. And so you find out really quickly that there might be moles in the group who are trying to overthrow the process. And it gets – I have a feeling it's going to get more horror as it goes just because the reviews I've read say it gets more brutal. But even so far, it's kind of like you see it inching in. Right now, I'll call it a really good sci-fi thriller with a lot of horror leanings. And when they start the process, they have to do all these different puzzles, and then they have to go through interview process. But the interviews are like mind games with them. It's really good.
It's funny because yesterday I saw 3% in the Netflix queue, and they added another one called Glitch, which is an Australian like zombie TV show. I started watching the first 30 of it, and it basically has this Australian cop who gets a call to a cemetery, and all of a sudden he walks into the cemetery and there's just these people covered in mud and dirt, mostly naked, scared for their lives. They don't know what they're doing. It begins a little bit like
The Return.
It's like The Return.
Yeah.
I don't know thematically where they go with it, but I'll report back once
serious
I start kind of getting into it.
Or funny?
Serious.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, okay. But it's got that Australian charm.
Yeah, you know?
It's very charming. But I got up to a point where the cop discovers that his dead wife came back. And he's trying to figure out what's going on. But but it was just the image that was evoked of these kind of dirty people that came out of the grave. But it's interesting to kind of see what Netflix is putting out.
What's interesting about these releases is you don't hear anything about them.
They just happen.
They just appear.
And now there's one called, what is it, the OA? That's been...
Yeah, that's
Britt Merling. Well, that one's getting
billboards.
This is the first time I've, like, now it's their time to push it. You're like, oh, what's this?
Here's the next one that's coming up to Netflix that I'm really excited about. It's called Crazy Head. And it is a British TV comedy, which it's British, so I don't know how many actual episodes there are.
There's like three.
Yeah, but it is a British TV comedy about two girls who are able to see demons, and apparently they're very like unlikely pairings. Like one's kind of bumbling and works in like a bowling alley, but they are able to see demons and start hunting them. And it looks very Shaun of the Dead-esque, where it's like these two unassuming people shoved into this kind of monstrous situation. And that one starts in just like, I think it's like a week. So I'm really excited to see that one too. But I highly recommend checking out 3%. Because it's Brazilian, the whole thing is subtitled. So be prepared for that. But yeah, it's really cool so far. It's shot it's directed by the guy who was the cinematographer on City of God. So it's beautiful.
Rob, what you
got? I'm going to shoot out a couple of quick newbies because these are mostly things that I wanted to see before I cultivated my top 10 list. Just added to Netflix was I Am Not a Serial Killer.
Yeah.
Which
is something I've been hearing a lot about it all year. I really liked it a lot. It's really, really cool. Christopher Lloyd is one of the characters in it. And it was directed by a guy named Billy O'Brien. But what's fascinating to me is I guess this is based on a series of novels.
It's a trio.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. I read it was a trilogy, but apparently the author's done 5 books.
And really?
I think the 4th and 5th one also have this character of John Wayne Cleaver, who in the movie, he's a kid. He's about 15, and it's very Dexter-esque, quite frankly. Yeah. And that's kind of what I liked about it, is that it's similar to that tone in that he has these impulses. Him and his mother work as morticians, and he has this impulse to kill, which he holds back, and he tries to kind of disguise his impulses from the general public. But then there's another killer in town, and it's kind of like him trying to figure out who that is. That is where this story takes place. I really liked it. I want to actually watch it again because I felt there was like a lot of subtle things going on, and there's some really surprisingly cool
stuff
in it.
Yeah, there's some really good twists. We're not saying that will make it worth your time to check out. I thought it was super fun. It was one of my favorite surprises of the year where I didn't know anything. Yeah. I watched it and went, wow, that was a good movie.
I saw it at Fantasia, and definitely like it was one of my favorite films from the festival. I thought it was Christopher Lloyd's best acting.
He's great in it.
Forever. Like,
yeah.
He's really good in it.
And also shot on film, which was cool. Like,
16mm.
Yeah, it had that nice... Yeah. It felt like an older movie. Yeah, it did. Yeah, it felt good.
So I saw that one on Netflix. I rented on Amazon Demon. I didn't even realize it finally got released, but this is the one that's been talked about quite a bit.
Is this the one where the director committed suicide?
Yes, this is a Polish film, and the director was Mersin Rana.
Yeah.
And I know, Elric, you love this movie.
Yeah, it's also very foreign. You know, it doesn't fit easily into horror. It has great horror stuff in it, but it also has big comedy pieces and
crazy
set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's a guy who moves through he's getting married to this, he's marrying into this family.
But been living in London versus actually
he's going back to Poland, and they're celebrating on the property. They're gonna have a giant wedding and everything. And but he's kind of cleaning up the place and stumbles on kind of what could be an unmarked grave. He's not totally sure. So the majority of this movie takes place at the wedding, where the title is Demon, so he kind of maybe getting possessed. But it's interesting how it works out. And, me and Ryan were talking about it before. I liked the film. I didn't love it. I think it's an amazingly well-made and put-together film. Yeah, and there's a certain sense of dread and things in it. There was one scene in particular that I was telling Ryan about before that I loved, which is, it's a very gradual thing, the idea of him getting possessed. But there's a scene, because in the middle of a wedding, you're a little drunk. Yeah. And there's a moment, it's like kind of one long shot where, everyone's dancing in a circle to kind of like this festive Polish music. But you see him kind of being very like distraught by the whole thing. And it made me as a viewer distraught watching it. And that's kind of like the midway turning point where this all kind of happens.
It's very similar in its way to the wailing of being so uniquely what it is from its culture.
Yes, yeah.
Which is a little foreign to us, but then the horror things really work. But then it also is going, it's not going to give you exactly what you want as an American horror viewer because you're used to a certain ending. Like my biggest takeaway, and I bet you'll agree, is for me at least, if that movie had a dynamite ending, and I mean big, it would have been my number one. I wouldn't even 100%. Question, but because instead it chooses to go for this very minimal, simple thing that leaves you with hanging. hanging ideas. I kind of, you know, it's not quite the movie you want it to be. It's probably the movie he wants it to be, but it's not quite the movie I want it to be.
Yeah, they leave things so subtly that you, the audience, have to fill in a lot of the blanks. And so I appreciate that, and I liked it, and I'm glad I saw it. And of course, you know, there's a little weird sense of dread knowing that the director is no longer with us.
Yeah, I mean, I would go so far as to say it's my favorite debut of the year, and that's why it's even more heartbreaking, because I'm like, damn.
Yeah, and the thing I will say is the lead guy who plays Pietro, Ital Taran, definitely one of the best performances this year, because he really goes there. I mean, he kind of starts out with this like cool Ewan McGregor swagger, but then he gets possessed, and like to be able to pull that off and really go for it, that really impressed me. That was the most impressive part.
Yeah, if you're a Polanski fan, this is the closest I've seen to the tone Polanski was able to make his films, which is there's comedy in there, that dark black, and like I saw the one thing about seeing that in the theater, I don't think visually you necessarily need to see this in the theater, but the theater, it's people are laughing their asses off because the characters, the side characters, are hilarious. They're at this wedding. It's very outrageous and strange, and the shots keep going. The shots are unbroken long takes. So it's just, it's one of those films you'll watch and go, man, I would have loved to have seen your second film, dude.
You
know, it's heartbreaking.
That's the thing. It's like I saw it, I rented it on Netflix, and I was talking to Rob, and I talked about it a little bit in depth. I didn't share the same enthusiasm. I liked it a lot, but there was this weird kind of otherworldly disconnect to it, and it's to a lot of the things that you're talking about. I also found it profoundly sad.
It is. It's a very sad,
really sad movie, because it was like on the happiest day of your life, you're going through this experience, you know, and
then real love. They're talking about a couple who are really in love. And then they're just destroying everything around them. So it's hard. I agree. It's hard. I think that's very Polish. I think that's very Eastern European, because these are countries that kept getting taken over by other countries. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, but it is foreign. The Wailing and that both had that thing where you're watching something that's like actually visionary. Like, wow, you guys are giving us a real vision here, but you can't completely get it. Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited for people to see it regardless. I'm glad you got to see it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I saw a film called Mercy by Chris Sparling, another Netflix original. This was a film that played on the film festival circuit. And Chris Sparling is the man who wrote Ryan Reynolds' movie Buried. And then he also did, I think he did ATM. But he directed this film, which... again, it begins with sadness, and it's kind of like a family event in which two sons come to see their father upstairs. Their mother is very painfully passing away. Like, she's going through a lot of stuff. And so the groundwork that Sparling lays is this kind of really high friction family dynamic, because you have the father, the mother, and then two sons who are related by blood, and then another brother, two other brothers who are from another dad or mom. Yeah. I lost track. So you've got these two sets of brothers who are already at odds with one another, because they're all waiting to find out when mom dies and who's going to get the dough. And at the very beginning of the film, they receive this mysterious black bag, and you kind of try to figure out what the black bag is. The black bag was delivered to the home by the local church, which the mother was prominently featured in. She was always there, you know, donating to church, and I think she was part of it. Anyways, what happens, it becomes a home invasion scenario. So you have these brothers there, you have the father, the mother, and then these masked killers come in, and there's kind of like a standoff situation, everybody looks out the window and they just see Mercy burned into the ground and these masked killers all standing around. You're like, what's that mean? Do they want her to die? Do they want her to live? What's going on? Ultimately, it ends like it begins, which is really somber, but also kind of like a big question mark on everything as to like why we're kind of watching a film like this. Sparling kind of interjects a little bit of narrative cleverness by bringing us up to a certain point of the event and then resetting it. So suddenly, you know, a bunch of people die, and then all of a sudden the reset button is hit, and then we see the events happen from another perspective. So it was interesting. I mean, like, I didn't feel like it wasted my time, but at the end of the day, it was interesting to see Sparling as a filmmaker, and I definitely think he has the chops to go further. But in terms of this film, it was like a pure kind of demonstration piece, like a something for the resume to kind of go, here's what I can do. You know, here are the actors I could play with. He had the lead actor who played Bob Benson on Mad Men. That was his lead actor. But it was just an interesting discovery. I had no idea that I know I played at Tribeca, and then next thing I know, it's kind of like
Netflix, yeah.
And then the poster.
About, yeah.
And the poster looks strangely like Crywolf, just because of the Masked Killer. But anyways, that's another one I saw.
All right, Becca.
Nice. I saw Blair Witch, and I watched it, the new one.
I kind of heard. I was going to be snarky. I was going to be like, oh, yeah, Blair Witch.
No. The new one, which I had not seen in the theater because I had planned to. And then there was some backlash, and Elric told me that
I could probably wait.
Don't get a babysitter. Wait.
Yeah. So I waited, and I watched it last night. And I saw it with a whole bunch of our non-horror friends who at the end were very anxious to see what I thought about it, immediately turned to me and were like, what do you think? And I was like, I don't. Like, it was weird because I didn't hate it, but I felt nothing. So that's kind of, I don't know. It was not for me.
Numbing.
I strangely kind of like it. I want to revisit it. But again, it's not what it's, I don't think it's the movie everybody wanted in 2016.
Yeah.
It's the Blair Witch movie I wanted in 1999, mm-hmm. which we got instead the Blair Witch Project. Like, I kind of wish it was this one, but
I still think there's a few too many movies in that movie. Like, I think they're pushing a few too many different stories, but you know.
There were some shots where I was like, that was a really cool thing that you did there. And like some found footagey stuff that I was like, okay, I had not seen that
before. Stuff,
but oh my God, Elric, maybe it was because you'd pointed it out, but the like 10-hour demonstration of what they were going to do with the cameras and how to use them.
When we're in 2016 of found footage, it's like, really? Like, and the drone payoff? It killed me.
It was, yeah. So but, you know. I watched that. But one that I'm excited that I have not seen yet, but I want to know if you guys have. Have you seen something from the 90s? It's a Dutch film called The Johnsons.
Yes.
Oh, is boom, it good?
Somehow, no, but it has. Because Roy Frumke's my old screenwriting teacher.
You look pained while you said this.
No, you can't just call him your old screenwriting teacher.
I remember seeing the poster for it, and I remember Roy and Rocco, who is his partner on the Substitute films. I remember they brought in the poster, and I was like, what the hell is this? Because it's like a weird fetus deformed.
It's like a fetus demon-y thing.
It's like a hillbilly baby or something like that. And that is the time I saw it. That was and that's all I remember. I just remember going, oh, that's interesting. A weird one.
So somebody had messaged me, and I guess they're like writing on it for something, and they were like, we'd love to get your thoughts on it. I was like, I've never even heard of this movie.
Well, right now, are you reviewing a film you haven't watched yet and you just asked Ryan about? Is that
what's
happening?
I have
right
not.
Here? What is happening?
I know
right
nothing. Oh, okay. I was interested to see if you guys had seen it because it took me aback where I was like, I've never even heard of this thing.
Yeah.
And apparently,
I think Anchor Bay put it out at one time. Okay. I think like in the during the early DVD phase. Like
I think
we
the
saw.
Film came early 90s. I have to go back and
find this is Becca. I'm telling you now, this is pure Becca.
This
movie is pure Becca.
Oh, so then it'll
please.
Work.
No.
Okay.
Because when you were coming at me with it, I didn't know if you had seen it or not.
No, I have not seen this.
No, you're going to find something for it.
Okay. Yeah. I am going to enjoy the Johnsons.
Well, I got to say, I got two more, and they both are home runs, so I have to mention them. One made me think that Shudder only existed as a platform so as I would see this movie finally, which is if you're a fan of that funny little almost horror subgenre where you have Cobra and 10 to Midnight, which you would kind of lump. Ooh. Oh, they have horror elements. Holy shit, man. I've never been a Chuck Norris fan. I was wrong. Silent Rage is the coolest fucking movie ever made.
Silent Rage scared the shit out of me as a kid.
The problem with the movie is it has, like, if ever there was a Keystone Cop moment that ruined a movie, like you always talk about, there's a side fat character who just continually is making the bad, silly boob and fat joke. Oh, that's just, he breaks every good tension scene. But Chuck Norris in this film is incredibly charming. This is like, there's a psychotic killer who's been brought back to life, and Chuck Norris is trying to take him down. The opening is shot with, like, long takes, and it's an axe killer, and he kills a family, and you're like, holy shit, it's all very serious. It has a terrible love montage in the middle of the movie, which is hilarious. But this movie is so much fun. If I'd seen this, I mean, I missed the boat. I know a lot of you listening, this was a film you saw probably on HBO and loved it. This film is, I mean, I would buy Shudder just so I could watch this movie right now.
Man.
That's how awesome it was.
Silent Rage.
I think it was canon. I might be wrong. It would make sense if it was part of that.
It feels like a canon.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like canon. That movie was super fun. And this is the best, man. And this is really for you two slasher fans here. The best thing about our show is that we give you guys a ton of recommendations. Occasionally, you'll give us a recommendation. That's nice. Occasionally, you'll walk up to us and go, dude, you have to watch this. Here's a copy I bought for you. When you do that, we listen.
Yeah.
Okay? Jacob Semham, I'm probably butchering your last name, but you've given us other cool stuff in the past. He did our 31 movies of horror.
Oh, yeah.
He came up to me and goes, dude, there is a giallo film made in Amsterdam called Amsterdam.
It's awesome. Dude, I have it on
Dick
DVD.
Moss, really? Yeah. I've never even heard of this movie.
Dick Moss.
Dick Moss, Shameless and Shame. He takes it up to me, and I watched this movie last night. It took me a couple months. This movie, okay, this would be my pitch. It's Torso meets Jaws. It's a giallo set in the canals. This whole city is based around these canals. And there is a, it just opens with an underwater shot going along the canals, watching things going underwater, coming up, going up. And then eventually you start to realize it's like a frogman, like somebody wearing, you know, diving suit, going through the canals of Amsterdam, killing people in brutal ways, never explained why he's really killing these people. This movie is absolute bonkers. And the craziest part is, it is not some cheap, you know, because Amsterdam wasn't making movies like this. It's not some cheap little giallo. This movie looks like a major, major action film. Mm-hmm. As jet boats flying through the air and explosions.
Oh,
and then it has crazy violence to women.
You know,
and
the funny thing is Dick Moss is able to, like, stretch a budget. I mean, like, if you've seen Sint, like, Sint, have you seen Sint?
Mm-mm.
Oh,
what
my God.
Sint?
You need to see Sint.
Okay,
Sint?
How do you spell that?
S-I-N-T.
I've never heard of Dick Moss. This is all new.
Wait a minute. He did The Lift. Have you ever seen The Lift?
Yeah, I did see The Lift a long time. Oh,
so
weird.
He did The Lift, and then he did the remake with Naomi Watts, and then he did this movie,
Sint. I see why you're on the show now. It's for moments like this.
No,
occasionally, we're like, why is he here?
Yeah,
and then this happens. We're like, oh.
This is bring up some Dick Moss, and I'm like, guys. No, Sint is about St. Nicholas. It's like the true. Yeah. And
well,
he
it's
listed
as Saint, usually.
It's listed as Saint.
Oh, you mean the newish one?
Yeah.
It's newish, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've seen the cover. I've never seen it, but I'm going to watch it this Christmas.
It is so good, and it's also on Shudder.
I can't believe it's that same guy.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
But the only scene I'm gonna tell you guys to watch is it has a scene at the start, and a boat is going under a canal with full of nuns and little kids wearing like Cub Scout uniforms, and there's a body hanging from the canal from the bridge, and the boat can't stop, so the boat hits it, and blood starts streaming across the top, and then blood flickering on every person, and it is one of the funniest.
I pulled it up.
Yeah, that's the scene. I can't remember the last time I laughed out loud by myself and couldn't stop laughing for a few minutes. It's that kind of scene. In parts, it's kind of boring film because it's very much a police procedural kind of movie, but the parts that are horror are dynamite. So I'll just lend you this copy, but thank you, Jacob.
I think he gave me one too.
He might have. If not, I'll lend it to you, but it's just totally bonkers.
They released a regionless DVD, and I don't even remember what company.
I think
it's
Shameless Entertainment.
Okay, yeah, it's got a yellow spine.
Yeah, yellow spine.
And so I have that one that I think I got like a press copy of it a couple of years ago, but yeah, it was one that I'd never seen before until I got the copy, and then I was like, what is this madness? It's wonderful.
It was great. Yeah. And I know we have to go to you, Rob, but there's one other film. If anyone liked The Fitz from last week, this is another one that's like drama, but laced with the kind of horror music, and is one of my favorite films of the year, not just horror. It's called Krisha. It won South By, I think. It is about a 65-year-old woman coming home for Thanksgiving, and she is a tornado of everything that is going to destroy the world of her family and friends, and she's been a problem in their family. And this movie, it had a lot of similarities to someone in our family that I recognized this character, and I think a lot of people will. But the opening shot is this, you know, elderly woman, 65, her face with horror music peaking in the first shot, and you're like, what the fuck is this? Then it becomes just this family drama. But you realize what they're saying is the horror of real life. Like, a turkey hits the ground, you're like, oh my God. Like, it's that kind of movie. And I thought this movie was absolutely genius. It's not straight horror, but it's visionary. The guy made it in 7 days with his real family and all the roles. And this film, it's actually pretty scary. And I would highly – so if you like the kind of recommendations when I throw you, like, The Fitz or something, that kind of movie, Krisha fits into that niche.
Where did you see it?
I'm glad. I'm so glad you saw it. I have to watch that and The Fitz during my holiday break.
Krisha was just nuts. I think a lot of you will – that was Amazon free, too, right now.
That's on Amazon.
And it's brand new.
Wait a minute,
just hit?
Yeah, Krisha just hit, and I just watched it. It's great.
That makes
great
me thrilled.
So, you know, there's some really – the trend between those two films are these realistic dramas that will lace horror music onto a drama scene and change the whole movie.
Yeah.
It becomes a different thing. It's not quite horror, but they're playing with the way you feel about something, and I find that fascinating. Like, it's just an interesting trend, you know?
Yeah.
Right. All right, I'm going to finish up with my last few. I don't want to get too into it because I'm going to talk at length about it during our best of, but I saw The Eyes of My Mother. Boom. Freaking masterpiece. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Becca.
Not my jam this year,
bye,
guys.
Becca.
Not my jam.
Cinema Police is going to make you watch it not on your computer.
Some amazing scene, but not my jam.
First of all, it's like 70 minutes. It's really short. But I was, you know, again, because of the pacing of it and the fact that it's in black and white, And it has a, it's not like it, but it's got that same uneasy vibe that like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh yeah, that
the entire time just kind of
yet more beautiful.
But yeah, it's very beautiful in terms of being. It's the guy's first movie, right? It's a debut. Mm-hmm. In terms of a debut, it's fantastic. Yeah. So I absolutely love that one. I think you should check it out. I also saw another one that you saw last week. I saw Siren, adaptation of Amateur Night, which is the opening scene in VHS. You know what? I had a lot of fun with this movie, mm-hmm. and that's the thing is, you know. Every once in a while, you want to watch the serious art house movie like The Eyes of My Mother.
Yeah, but you can't watch it all the time, right?
And the other days, you want to watch something just batshit and fun like Siren. And the reason I had so much fun with it, other than the fact that I'm kind of in love with Hannah Fearman, the lead who plays the
Siren.
She's
really great.
There's something visually exciting about her. But there's one scene in particular that made the movie for me, and it's basically... there's a moment at a diner where there's a couple of cops and people, and they pull Chase Williamson. Basically, she's after Chase. She's gotten his scent. And
he's the final girl.
He's the final girl on it. And he's essentially getting arrested, and then you see her coming out of the woods towards them. And the reason I loved it, he ends up putting – because what she does is she makes a noise to kind of put you in her spell. He puts headphones on. And so all of a sudden you have this diner sequence, which is, I don't know, like 2-3 minutes long, where it's totally silent. And he's running, but in the background you see like bodies flying out, and then you see her kind of like jump up.
With the soundtrack of it from his perspective.
Yes, there's like cool shit happening in the background while it's kind of silent. And then of course she pops up in front of him and she's like, I like you. Yeah. And I was just like, you know what? For that scene alone, I had a lot of fun. It was one of my favorite bits from
when they do a lot to go above the budget in moments like that, where like you're like, oh, whoa, you pulled that off.
Siren on VOD now?
It's on VOD.
Redbox.
It's on VOD. It's on Amazon. Yeah. It's all that. But I honestly, the DVD was like $9 on Amazon. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I'll just buy the DVD because, you know, if I can keep it, I'll keep it.
And Chase is really great. You know, he's a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, did you have anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, then can I say one more thing? Another movie I squeezed in, and I haven't seen this in a long time, George Romero's Martin. Mm.
God, I love that
it's
one.
It's been out of print for a really long time, but I have the DVD of it. And you know what's funny? Is like it's been so long since I've seen it that I only remember little bits and pieces of it. When I saw it as a kid, when I was getting into Romero's movies, I always liked it. But you know what it is? It's like when you have different perspective, like the pacing of it always felt a little off to me. But now watching it through adult eyes, like it could be a freaking masterpiece.
Yeah, I think it's his best film.
The idea of a serial killer that thinks he's a vampire. But the thing I forgot about is all the black and white sequences. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, right at the beginning, he murders a girl on a train. And I just love that it goes to black and white. And he imagines, he has this fantasy of how beautiful it's going to be.
Right.
And then 2 seconds later, he comes in and she's got like...
She's got the face mask.
The face mask. And like it's all messy and awkward.
Kind of like marriage.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What you think it's going to be, then what it is.
Pretty much. And there's a scene right smack in the middle that's similar where he's kind of stalking this girl and breaks into her house only to find her in the middle of an affair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's this long, drawn-out, like, awkward thing where he's chasing the guy and all that. But I forgot how great a movie that was. And it's mm-hmm. also one of my favorite, like, shocking endings, abrupt endings.
Yeah.
And the film that most, I think, it might be my number one deserving of a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Anything
out
there.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's hoping.
There's no great
Romero's
edition.
Romero's always had those kind of, like, those heavy moral debates. I mean, obviously, it's there in Night of the Living Dead. And it comes out a lot in
things.
Season of the Witch. Like, they're always, you know, it's about a vampire, but it's actually about religious versus mental illness versus legend, things like that. But I think that Martin's the one that kind of pushes that, you know, questioning envelope the furthest of what do you believe and why do you believe it, as he's like battling his uncle and everything.
And great regional horror. Again, like one of those films that you feel the place. Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I know where the shot. I love seeing that regional style.
I believe he said it's his favorite movie that he's made, personally.
And also see Knight Riders, guys.
That one is on blue.
Knight Riders is fantastic.
Really?
There's a lot of Tom Savini flesh in that movie.
Knight Riders is fantastic. Ed Harris owns that fucking movie. He sells it
When
so
hasn't
hard.
He owned anything besides Creepshow Dance?
But playing kind of like a King Arthur that rides a fucking motorcycle
and then
controls his gang, you know, it's just like, oh, come on. And it's about honor and it's about doing the right thing and it's about fame and it's about what do you do with that fame and where do you take the money and where do you put it? And it's just like, and it's about family. It's fucking about family
this
before Fast and Furious,
plea.
Guys.
Yeah. Has to watch Knight Rider.
So here's my quick Knight Rider story. So when I was a freshman in college, this is when I'd like really started to explore my horror love. I wrote a letter to Tom Savini because we didn't have email at the time. We did, but you didn't use it for things like this. So I wrote a very long handwritten letter to Tom Savini about how much I loved him, and I was really hoping for an autograph of his I could put up on my dorm room wall.
I know what he sent
you. And he sent me the signed picture of him in a codpiece from Knight Rider, and I opened it up, and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? Nice. And I still hung it, and I still have it.
That's the greatest photo of Tom Savini.
Sex machine. right there.
Really quick, before we wrap up, I just want to say happy 20th Scream.
Oh, yeah.
By the time this airs, it's the 20th anniversary of Scream. And
how crazy is that, man? Because we did our episode, our bonus one, and we were talking about seeing it in theaters. I know. That was 20 years ago. We're old,
20
dude.
Years ago.
We may or may not be doing a trivia round for it tonight at Dead Right Horror
Trivia.
Nights
ago now.
Who knows? Oh, wait.
That.
Oh, damn.
That every week.
I was
she
thinking this went up
thing.
On Friday.
It does.
Who knows?
Oh, no. Then it'll
last
be tonight.
Night. Okay.
So when we get
to that end, it'll be tonight.
This is the end of part one of...
No. We're on regular episodes now.
Oh, we are?
Yes. Yeah. Technically. Oh, okay. So next week is one of the biggest guests we wanted to have on the show for a long time.
And I think we would probably, the only time we'd all be in agreement, like probably our favorite show of the decade.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, like maybe post Twin Peaks, my favorite show.
It's not as if he's sitting in the room right now hearing
these comments. I just remember having him on the Bloodcast.
Yes.
And then you guys for months on end going, Can we get Brian on? Can we get Brian on?
Like, they wanted him to be your co-host, right? Pretty much before Clark took him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm excited about all of his stuff, guys, but really, Voyager.
Yeah.
Voyager, finally you guys gave me a Star Trek guest.
There's your hints.
There's the hints.
We'll see you on Monday.
Have a great weekend.
Yes.
Happy dining.
All right, thanks, guys.